six step bar. Every day lit, no net bar. Movado so special. I don't need no lecture. You want to do what I do. You want to move, I want to move. You can't fit in my shoe. You can't walk till my...
It's March, and you know what that means. It's les rendez-vous de la francophonie.
Check out rvf.ca to discover all the activities and contests happening across Canada.
Welcome to the Franco Podcast.
Welcome to the 2024 Rendezvous de la Francophonie podcast. This year, I interviewed eight bilingual or multilingual people for the podcast, including KL Keeby. KL is an activist and author living in the West Kootenay region of BC. KL speaks English, French, Spanish, and Estonian, and is currently learning the language of the land where they live, Sensiljin, the interior Salish language of the Senext peoples. Here is our conversation. We've talked a lot about the relationships between language, land, and culture. Would you mind talking about your own linguistic journeying?
Sure. So my mother tongue is Estonian, and that's what I spoke at home and my family exclusively until I went to school. I was born and raised in Toronto, so this is in the context of the refugee community in Toronto. When I went to school at five, then I started learning English. So English is my second language.
When I was 18, I
went to France and lived in a French family, immersed myself there, and learned French. Somewhere after that, I learned Spanish, and I've also dabbled in so many languages in my life. Most recently, Sinseljin, the dialect of the Senaiks, the interior Salish dialect. So I'm a language dabbler. Mm-hmm. And this is very typical of Estonians because there's only a million of us. So if you want to talk to anybody other than the million or relate to, then you learn a lot of languages. Both my parents spoke numerous languages, and most of my relatives, Estonian relatives, speak numerous languages.
What were the languages that your parents spoke?
So my mother spoke Russian, English, German, I'd say, well, those were her fluent languages, but she also spoke and understood Ukrainian and Polish. And my father, of course, Estonian, he understood Russian. That was the secret language my parents spoke when they didn't want us children to understand. And German, he wasn't as verbal as my mother was.
Was there any particular reason you decided to go to France when you were 18? And had you already had a leg up in terms of studying French in school, or was it relatively new to you?
No, I grew up in Ontario. So in the 70s, we started taking French, I think, in grade six. So I did, you know, grade six through grade 11. I ended up in the south of France. So I actually learned French with an interesting accent, which I mostly have shed at this point. I was just outside Toulouse in the southwest of France. And I also learned quite a bit of Occitan, which is the traditional language of the south of France. French, of course, is a language from the north that was imposed upon the Occitans in the 13th century when there was a crusade against them. And it's another Romance language closely related to Catalan. So I chose very deliberately because Canada is a bilingual country. I wanted to be able to understand the full reality of the English, French, Canadian history. And you know, the older I've gotten and understood the First Nations underpinning of this country, the more I've also learned bits of Cree, bits of Ojibwe, bits of other Indigenous languages. I would learn them all if I could.
So you were in France for
a year.
And did the family that you were staying with speak much English?
Interestingly, the old woman who I took care of, she was 91 at the time, was English. 100% English. She came to France in 1900 as an 11-year-old child because she was sickly and was raised by her aunt who had married a Frenchman. And so she taught me for the first 3 months. And it was a fascinating process because she didn't have a lot of teeth, so her pronunciation wasn't very clear. But what we did was we'd sit and I read from this beautiful book that was published in like 1900 by Pierre Loti about Angkor Wat, in Cambodia, and it was a hand illustrated like tome. It was massive, and I'd open it up and I'd read, and she'd correct my pronunciation. And that's what we did every day for until she became sick and died. And then at that point, it became, I'd say, 95% French. But when Mémé was teaching me, she rarely resorted to English. If I could, when she had explained it and explained it and explained it with the patience of a 91-year-old to me multiple times, and I still didn't get it, then she'd tell me the English word.
French is a language that you're still pretty sharp with.
I'd say I am fluent, but because I don't speak all that often, I have a couple of Francophone friends that I occasionally talk with. So that keeps me up on it. And I read in French occasionally. I'd say I forget vocabulary, but otherwise, no, it's completely in there. It's solid. I have an accent, obviously. People can't sometimes figure out what my accent is. They kind of look at me, even in France, they'd look at me and go, are you from the Alsace? Because they recognize something, but it wasn't, I don't have a heavy English accent. I probably have more of an Estonian accent, actually, in French.
And how did you acquire Spanish?
I spent some time in Spain. I had a Spanish friend in the south of France who taught me, took Spanish in university, traveled a little bit in South America. Again, my comprehension is great and my ability to express myself with complex ideas is minimal. What's interesting between French and Estonian for me, in Estonian, I don't have an accent and I'm completely fluent, but I have troubles expressing like complex intellectual concepts in Estonian because I learned it as a child in my family, you know. With French, I'm much better on an intellectual level and perhaps I'm missing some very simple words. And I think the same is true for me of Spanish. Like, I can't think of what the word for toothbrush is, but I could talk about industrialization. They exist in different levels in my mind.
Do you do much reading in Estonian?
I try have a book, do read two or three books in Estonian per year. And sometimes I succeed and sometimes I don't, depending on which tome I've dug myself into.
But it's a bit more tiring than just reading in English or even reading in French.
Absolutely. Estonians love compound words. So there are these big long words that you have to decipher, you know, sort of take apart. And I don't have the kind of instant recognition for words just visually that I do in English.
You alluded earlier to your family's experience of displacement. How has that affected your relationship to language?
What it means is that I was raised in Canada, born and raised in Canada with a different first language. And because their displacement was involuntary, meaning they were refugees, they're not immigrants, they very much retained a sense of community and cultural solidarity in exile. And that meant that the language was very, very precious. And so I've grown up with this notion that your mother tongue, that language is so dear to you. And I feel it. Sometimes I can almost cry thinking about certain words in Estonian that are just so beautiful to me. There's a different worldview attached to a language. There's some things that is very are difficult to say in English. And they just express themselves so perfectly in Estonian. One perfect example is that, and this exists in a lot of languages, but it doesn't exist in English, which is that when you see somebody working, you don't just say hello. There is a greeting for the person who's working. And in Estonian, it's jõudu, which basically means I offer you strength or energy. And it's such a warm feeling to say that to somebody because you're greeting them, you're acknowledging their work, you're offering them energy to continue it, and you're holding them in that space. You're not interrupting with, hello, I want to talk with you. You're offering them connection that doesn't need to go past that expression. And somebody might answer, jõudu tarvis, which I need energy. Thank you. It's instead of saying thank you, just I need that. Thanks is implicit.
We've had a few conversations, too, about how even further back than your family's Estonian speaking, that there are other languages in your ancestry. I'm wondering if you could talk about those and how they relate to you.
I don't think Estonian is either one of my parents' mother tongue. It is the language that was chosen for the country of Estonia, which is a nation state that is comprised of many different Finno-Ugric peoples. My father is Mulk. And so the Mulks have their own dialect or language. I'm not quite sure where it's classified at this point. But when I met my aunt for the first time, I also had this, what is she saying? She was speaking Estonian, but she was speaking it with such a strong Mulk accent that it was difficult for me to comprehend. I've since then studied Mulk and understand quite a bit of it and understand how it differs from Estonian. On my mother's side, things are much more complex. She was raised in the Soviet Union outside of Leningrad, which was all Finno-Ugric territory until the Slavic peoples moved in. And when my brother had his DNA done, it revealed something that I had suspected, which is that I have ancestors on that side that are Finno-Ugric, but not Estonian. So they could be Ingrian. The Ingrians were a people who migrated from the area around Finland to that Lake Ladoga, Leningrad area, like I think 7 centuries ago, something like that. They could be Votic, who are a Finno-Ugric people who are probably as endangered as the Sinaiks are, in that there's apparently only a handful of native speakers left, and they've mostly been assimilated into Russian culture. They could have been Karelian, who are the people to the east of the Finnish border. And I have one Russian ancestor, a great-great-grandmother. So there's a polyglot mix over there. I know that my grandfather on my mother's side spoke Finnish fluently. That's what we were told. He spoke with the neighbors. Well, it's a good chance all those neighbors who spoke Finnish were actually Ingrians. My grandfather died before I was born, so there was no opportunity to ask these questions, and I didn't quite understand the whole complexity of it until more recently. But it certainly gives me a lot of understanding and compassion for the Sinaiks quest to have their specific dialect revitalized, retained, and honored as different from the other interior Salish dialects, because a dialect has so much knowledge in it about land. I mean, every language holds worldview and knowledge, and if we just mush them all together and say, oh, this is all just one, we lose the bits, right? There's so much beauty and complexity and value in each particular dialect, in each particular language. Mm-hmm. Something that Marilyn Hammond said to me years ago, she's a musician who is Quebecois on her mother's side and Anglophone on her father's side, and she sings in both languages. She said, having one language is like living in a room that has one window. Having two languages is like living in a room with two windows. And so I picture these windows looking out into the same world, but from different perspectives. And so it feels very enlivening and broadening in my worldview to have access to the worldviews of many, many languages. And I think that's a lot of where my interest comes from. I'm so, so happy that I had the good sense at 18 to go and learn French when it was easy for me to learn. That was a great gift that I offered to myself.
Once you've learned one or two languages, it must become progressively easier to understand the concepts.
I think so, because again, I was just diving into the Nselchin dictionary the other day, and I'm starting to understand how the language is constructed, so that when I'm offered up a word, I'm like, oh, I recognize that ending. Oh, okay, so that's got something to do with the top of something. Or, oh, that's the ending for trees. So I'm looking at a word about trees. Or understanding how that languages are constructed completely differently. I think if you only know European languages, they're very constructed very similarly. I have the great benefit of speaking Estonian, which is a Finno-Ugric language, which is of Asian descent. And so the construction is very different. And so I've got that worldview. And Sinselchin, the Sinaiks dialect, is constructed wildly differently. And that fascinates me.
In a recent episode of the North American Francophone podcast, podcaster Claire Marie Brisson used the phrase, a language that feels like home. Is there a language that feels like home for you?
Estonian. Yes,
Estonian,
absolutely.
Full stop.
Yes. And having said that, people have noted that when I speak my different languages, that my body language and my presentation changes. And apparently I'm much lighter and more fun in French, which I like. So there's a part of me that feels at home in that language that perhaps doesn't come out in Estonian. And in English, you can hear I have a pretty intellectual bent. I think that's partly because I learned it at school. There's pieces of me that find home in each language in Sincelchen because it's the language of the land where I live. There's a certain connection to home there as well. But I'd say my deepest heart language is my mother tongue, Estonian.
That was my conversation with K.L. Kivi, who lives in Sinaikstamhulau in the West Kootenay region of British Columbia. You have been listening to the 2024 Rendezvous de la Francophonie podcast, hosted and produced by Catherine Fisher. The podcast celebrates March, the month of the Francophonie, and it was made possible by the Dialogue Foundation, which has a mission to engage in sustainable dialogue within the Francophonie and with all of Canada's diversity. This year's Rendezvous de la Francophonie partners and funders include the Government of Canada, the Linguistic Portal of Canada, the National Film Board, Air Canada, La Fédération de Jeunesse Canadienne Française, NAV Canada, and many other groups, including the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
Welcome to the Franco Podcast.
Welcome to the 2024 Rendezvous de la Francophonie Podcast. I interviewed 8 bilingual or multilingual people for this year's podcast, including Emily Soke-Davidson. Emily is the sponsorship coordinator at Kootenay Co-op Radio in Nelson, BC. Here is our conversation. You speak 3 languages, French, English, and Spanish. How did you learn each of these?
Well, French is my mother tongue. So mm-hmm. I learned because I was born in France. English, we learned pretty early at school in France. I remember being in even kindergarten and learning some like English song, like head and shoulder, knees and toes. and after that, from 12 years old to 18, it's like a mandatory like discipline at school, as important as history, geography, and so yeah, we a few hours per week, we are learning English. And after that, we have the option to, again, from 12 to 18, we have the option to use a second language. So according where you live in France, it could be German, Italian, or Spanish. Usually it's like between Spanish, German, Italian, I would say. And so I lived very close to the border with Spain. So I decided to pick Spanish, and also because my ancestors are Spanish. My great grandparents are Spanish. They moved to France during the dictatorship, of Franco in Spain. Yeah.
Oh,
so they escaped Spain in the 30s to come in France. So learning Spanish was also a way to be connected with my roots.
Nice. And have you done a little traveling in Spain?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
What do you think are the biggest benefits of speaking more than one language for you?
I feel like it makes me feel like we live in such a beautiful planet with so many diversity. Last night I was hosting a dinner at home, and I have a friend from Argentina and a friend from Chile, and they ended up speaking Spanish around the table. And I realized it was making me so happy to hear another language. So it could have been speaking, I don't know, if I have Filipino friend, it could have been they speak like this language, but they were speaking Spanish and it made me feel so happy. So I just, it just make me feel like we live in a beautiful world where there is different culture and beautiful diversity. So mm-hmm. I like to be able to communicate with people from another country.
Has it made a difference for your working life?
I work in French and in English, definitely. Less in Spanish, of course. Yeah, I feel like here less in Spanish, but I work for Kootenay Co-op Radio, and it's very often that I pick up the phone, people hear I have an accent, they speak to me in English, and as soon as they hear I have an accent, they're going to switch in French. There is way more people than we think that speak French. I like it.
How did you end up, coming from France to British Columbia?
I'm going to try to make it short.
And make it as long as you want.
So when I turned 30, so it was like 8 years ago, I decided to travel and to see how is it to live in another country. And it's something that always fascinated me. When I was younger, my parents had friends that have children that were living like in England, or, and I always felt, I was like, wow, it's so cool to live in another country. I remember thinking that when I was like 14 or something. So it took me until I was 30 to do it. So I did what we call a working holiday visa. So I was able to work or travel in Canada for 2 years. So first I arrived in Quebec because I wanted to meet my cousins, my Quebecer cousins, as we say. And I also felt very comfortable to first arrive in a part of Canada where I could speak French. And I also wanted really to discover the Quebec culture. So I spent time there, but I always love speaking English and learning English. So the goal was to go in the English part of Canada. But honestly, I didn't know where exactly to go. And I didn't know where the west of Canada started. So sometimes I say to people, I don't know if Winnipeg is the west of Canada. I didn't know where I could go. And so, of course, British Columbia was always coming back in conversation when I was talking about, I want to go speak English somewhere else. I want to leave Quebec and go somewhere else. And so as I explained to people, I wanted to ski. So of course it helps to go in the mountains. And yeah, some people talked about Jasper, Banff, Canmore, Whistler, or to go on Vancouver Island. And few people talked about Nelson. So I was like, okay, Nelson. But British Columbia just was really what was coming back in conversation. They were like, you should go to BC. So and I was like, okay, let's do it.
You ended up in Nelson.
Yeah.
And you found a Francophone community here.
Yes. At the beginning, actually, I wanted to stay away from the French community because I wanted to practice my English. And I know me, I was like, if I start to hang out with French people, I'm going to feel comfortable and maybe not push myself enough to immerse myself enough in English. So at the beginning, I didn't reach out to the French organization. And one day, it was hard to find a job. I didn't know many people. So one day I went to knock at their door. And they were amazing. And they gave me a job. And I met so many people. And it actually helped me. And I was still speaking in English because we speak English everywhere here anyway. I go to the grocery store, I go get a coffee. So I didn't lose the main purpose anyway. I was speaking in English. And I was building a network in the French community at the same time. So
Tell me about your history in community radio.
Well, it started with AFCO because I knock at their door and they started to know me. And I think they understand pretty quickly that I wasn't shy to talk to people. And they were doing Méli Mélo, one of the two radio shows in French on Kootenai Corp Radio. They have been doing it for, I think, like 16, 18 20 years, maybe. And so they say, you should try to do radio. I always loved radio, listening to the radio. So I did one Méli Mélo with Prudence at this time. I did one with Alex Pilon too. And I loved it. So they gave me a training and it happened that way.
Yeah. And it kept happening.
Yes, I've been doing it for 6 years now. And okay. So as a volunteer, I'm hosting Méli Mélo. And when the Kootenai Corp Radio offered the position of sponsorship coordinator, Prudence, who was working at the radio at this time, she's a Francophone, she's Quebecer, and she's my friend. And she said, you should apply. I could see you doing that. So I was like, okay, but... I was quite scared to work in English that way. I worked at Osso Negro in English, but you know, it's a double latte, okay, an Americano, okay, I want a sandwich, okay. You know, it was like easy, but to reach out to people for advertising or sponsorship in English, I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do that. And no, I can do that.
So how do you keep connected to your French roots?
Definitely the French organization, AFCO, is really doing an amazing job in the West Kootenays. So I like to go to their events. I like to go get a book there. They have an amazing library. And when I go, I like to pick up a book from France. I ask, I say, they have lots of Quebecer author, but they also have a bunch of author from France. And I like to read books from author from France because they talk about places that I know, the reference, cultural references that I know. So yeah, I like to go get a book there. I like to participate in their events, such as the Sugar Shack, even though I didn't grow up going to a Sugar Shack because I'm from France. But I'd like to gather with people. And I think there is something with the French community where they really like to sit down and eat together. Like they put tables and chairs and benches and we sit and we eat together. And it really reminds me the way I grew up. I grew up in a very small village in France of 200 people, which is very small. And we are always doing community activities and community gatherings and dinners and parties. And so what AFCO is doing is really reminding me this part of my life. So I really like it. And after that, I communicate a lot with my family back in France. Mm-hmm. We call each other a lot. And yeah, it's the way for me to stay connected. And also watching movies and TV shows that are happening in France. I realized sometimes I need to watch something that is happening in France right. Once in a while. Because yeah. I need that. I need to see the landscape. I need to hear people talking as I'm talking with the same expressions. And so once mm-hmm. in a while, I need that, definitely. And also because I didn't grow up in Quebec, so they have different cultural references yeah. in terms of like movies. I don't know the same actors. I don't know the same comedians. I didn't grow up watching the same TV shows. So sometimes I need to be connected with really this part of my culture.
Something from
the music too. I've been discovering like many Quebecer artists, French Canadian artists in general, doing Melly Mello. But I really like, sometimes I'm like, okay, let's listen something that I grew up with.
Yeah, totally understandable. So the Rendezvous de la Francophonie is coming up. And what does that mean to you?
It means lots of excitement around the French language. I felt it more maybe when I was working for the French organization and connected with them in that way. I remember we organized the first AFCO Faisson show. Was for the opening night of Les Rendezvous de la Francophonie in BC. So yeah, it represents a moment of excitement. And I like to hear the messages that we broadcast on the radio for this event and discover artists that are involved in Les Rendezvous de la Francophonie.
It's such a global celebration too. Like it's,
yes.
You know, I haven't traveled widely in kind of primarily French-speaking countries, but, you know, there are so many.
There was a cooking contest at yeah. some point, and my friend Dania entered the contest doing this really cool pie with almond, and I ended up doing it because it looked really great. So I remember we needed to vote for her. So, yeah, again, it's a moment of excitement where we get involved in this nationwide event, so...
Amazing. Do you have anything else to say to the people?
Well, I can add something very personal that I'm pregnant and making sure my child will speak French and English and maybe Spanish. It's very important to me. Yeah, I'm just excited to see how my child is going to grow up in this multiculturalism in Canada. having the influence of my French from France and my culture from France and the French Canadian culture and the English culture. Mm-hmm. I think it's very rich, and I'm really happy that that I'm able to offer this.
That was my conversation with Emilie Soquet-Davidson, who lives in Nelson, BC. You have been listening to the 2024 Rendezvous de la Francophonie podcast, hosted and produced by Catherine Fisher. The podcast celebrates March, the month of the Francophonie, and it was made possible by the Dialogue Foundation, which has a mission to engage in a sustainable dialogue within the Francophonie and with all of Canada's diversity. This year's Rendezvous de la Francophonie partners and funders include the Government of Canada, the Linguistic Portal of Canada, the National Film Board, Air Canada, La Fédération de la Jeunesse Canadienne Française, NAV Canada, and many other groups, including the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
Welcome to the Franco Podcast.
Welcome to the 2024 Rendezvous de la Francophonie Podcast. I interviewed 8 bilingual or multilingual people for this year's podcast, including Callie Linz. Callie lives in Nelson and is the executive director of BC Arts Organization. She has a background in dance and theater. Here's our conversation. My first question for you is, what do you think the value of speaking more than one language is for you?
Sure. I really like that question. And I'm actually going to defer to the brilliant playwright Thompson Highway and some comments that he made recently. I think he did the 2023 Massey lecture, and it's all on CBC Ideas podcast as well. He did a version of them there. But I love what he said about speaking 3 languages. He may speak more than that, but he was speaking specifically about Cree, English, and French. And he said, you know, English is very much the language of the mind, of science. It's a very rational language. For him, it was the language of the head. And he was talking about French being the language of the heart and how many people talk about French as la langue d'amour. And he really felt like that creative, expressive side is so well captured in French. And then he said, Cree is the language of the stomach. He said, when you're in a mix of people speaking Cree, there's just so much laughter. It is such a... just such a full body experience speaking and living in Cree. And he has such love for that language. And I just thought, what a really brilliant way of touching on the different affects and the different sensations of living within different languages. I truly feel like a different person when I'm speaking French versus when I'm speaking English. There's different facets that come out, I think, in different languages. So I really think just being in touch with those different facets of yourself and being in touch with different ways of thinking, I think it shifts the way that you look at the world when you force yourself to frame it differently in a different language.
When did you start to learn French, and how did that progress for you?
I guess it started in, oh goodness, when do we start learning French here in elementary school, I suppose? And I really wanted nothing more than to be in French immersion. And I actually was denied my request by my family. I was primarily raised by my grandparents. I was a bit of an odd kid in that I've always been particularly interested in federal politics. So, you know, here in Canada, it's a very bilingual space. And I begged my grandma to request that I enter French immersion. I think it was from grade 7 onwards. And, you know, given the era that she grew up in, she looked at me and she said, school is hard enough in one language. Why in the world would you want to do it in 2? And she said no. And I was just absolutely gutted. I cried for a week. You know, it's very dramatic about it. I'm a theater person by passion and training. So I was very dramatic about it all. She eventually caved and got me on the waiting list, but I never was able to enter, unfortunately. But I had a fantastic French teacher in high school at Stanley Humphreys in Castlegar. And I did the J'explore program, which is a wonderful program that's funded, I believe, through the federal government. And they take Anglophones and bring them to small towns in Quebec. And there's an exchange both ways. And you do a significant immersion experience over the summer. You take French courses through local universities. So I was very grateful to spend a summer in Trois-Pistoles, Quebec. And that was sort of the start of really enjoying being immersed in the language. And then, of course, I went to McGill when I graduated from high school. And that's an Anglophone university, and most of my studies and, you know, my life on campus was in English. But I was so passionate about being out in the contemporary dance scene. And I feel like I learned so much about French and about sort of living in French by continuing my dance training within those primarily French institutions. What a wonderful scene it is, the contemporary dance scene in Montreal. So that's my very winding path.
Absolutely. Are you finding uses for your French and kind of predominantly Anglophone environment here in BC?
Well, I've only been back in BC now for about a year and a half. So not as much as I'd like. And I think I'm a little gun shy anytime I have the opportunity as well. I'm trying to seek out opportunities where that's really the focus going into the room, is I'm going to practice my French and just try to bring it to the surface a little bit more.
Are there things that you love about being bilingual, and do you find anything difficult about it?
Well, you know what's so interesting, Catherine, is I really struggle with that word bilingual. Like I really wonder, you know, at what point, similarly, the word fluency, I find quite tricky. And I'm sure people say all the time, oh, I have such imposter syndrome with you know, calling myself bilingual or saying I'm fluent in my second language. So I was actually talking to my friend Lena. She's German. She's from Germany. And she's, you know, very recently come to sort of living her whole life in English. And she really learned English quite quickly. And I said to her, do you feel like you're fully bilingual, or do you feel like you're fluent in English at this point? And she said, no, which I found so fascinating because, you know, we speak in English all the time, and I don't feel like that being her second language is any impediment to our communication in any way. We may use different words for things, but I thought that was so interesting. She said, you know, I still think in German and I dream in German. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like I'm fluent yet. So all that to say, I feel the same way around the word bilingual. I'm not sure if I will ever feel confident enough to really label myself with that. But I do love the opportunity it provides to engage in conversations with more people and to engage with people on their terms, and to enter into their space and their world a little bit if they are French speakers, or if they are a speaker, you know, in a different language that that you also have some conversational ability in.
I guess maybe a proficiency is a better word for some people, for sure. Because I guess it is true, you may just never be quite as good as you are in your original language in any other language.
Mm-hmm. And I think it has so much to do with sort of that internal confidence. Like I don't know if I'll ever get rid of that sort of anxious feeling when I need to prime myself to speak French, right? So that's one of those things where it's a very internal feeling. So I don't know if it matters at all at the end of the day, but it's definitely there for sure.
Probably having a second language has opened up your mind a bit and made you a more creative person. You alluded a little bit to your time in the Montreal dance scene.
Yeah, I do think there's different conversations happening in, you know, English theater spaces versus French theater spaces. I would say that the dance community there is predominantly French, and it has a different flavor than the dance community in Toronto, for sure. And that's partly because those scenes are connected to different touring networks. Right? There's a lot of French and Western European companies that frequently tour through Montreal who don't come to Toronto, and you have a wider range of aesthetic experiences if you're comfortable entering both of those spheres, I find. So I do feel like my artistic experiences have been incredibly enriched by being able to dwell in both of those spaces.
I know you've done some journalism and some radio. Was any of that in French, or has it mostly been in English?
I was with CBC Radio, so the English side, not Radio-Canada. But it's interesting, when you are working in current affairs in Montreal, I was working out of the CBC Montreal office primarily as a Zosky intern, and you do need to do some of your research phone calls in French and some of your other story sourcing and prospecting in French. And that was one of those moments where you'd always have that slight anxiety when you go to dial a number, because you don't know which language to switch into based on the person on the other side of the phone when you're doing those initial calls, just to find out if they have anything to say, you know, about the story at hand. Yeah. And then, I mean, some shows that I worked on, I did spend a little bit of time with CBC Music that was based out of that office at the time. And of course, Radio 2 does some programming on both sides, but primarily in English. Thank goodness. I do feel like my proficiency is not high enough to be a working journalist in French. I can say that for sure.
Understandable. You'd have to be pretty good. Are there other languages you're interested in pursuing?
That's a great question. Well, you've mentioned that I spend a lot of time in the dance space. And for a time, I really thought learning German would be fantastic. And then I could just hang out in Berlin and see all of the postmodern dance and theater that I wanted. So German's definitely up there. I have dabbled in Duolingo Italian. I think that would be a great place to visit. I do enjoy learning languages. So I think, you know, now that I've got some proficiency in French, it's just a matter of focusing and picking one and having some discipline and yeah, seeing it through a little bit more. I'm one of those people where I just want to do everything all at once, all the time. So I do need to focus in a little bit. So I'm glad you asked me that question, because it has forced me to think about which one is next. I'm curious now, Catherine, do you speak any languages beyond French as well in English?
Well, actually, my French is pretty rudimentary. I have been learning with Duolingo for a few years, but you know, I tell people I'm probably at a grade 6 level or something. So I got a few years to go.
Maybe we'll have to go grab a tea and start practicing here and there.
I actually find that I can write and read reasonably, but yeah, my spoken French, because I don't really practice it with anybody, is pretty weak.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, practicing is hard here in BC for sure. I'm really grateful for AFCO, and I've yet to take advantage of a lot of their programs, but I certainly hope to do so soon.
Definitely. Yeah. And I mean, people, you know, people that speak the language, you know, often speak quite fast because that's how people speak, but I can't always follow that fast. So, but eventually, I have high hopes that eventually, you know, I'll be, you know, I'll proficient in some way.
I know we're coming up on time here, but I do have to share that that's when I started to feel like I was really quite proficient in French. It's when I would say a few words or, you know, have a very brief conversation with someone in a shop, and then they would start speaking very quickly on the assumption that I was Francophone. I thought, okay, great. This is where I've sort of leveled up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to say, oh, plus lentement, s'il vous plaît. Actuellement, je suis anglophone, désolé, très désolé. But I thought, oh, that's such a funny moment, actually, when so being someone from within theater and within those kinds of spaces, you know, I feel like my accent is probably better than, I shouldn't say that after I just said a few words there that were probably totally off the mark. But you know, when you're totally immersed in that environment, I feel like right, I could ape the sound and the rhythm more than all the granularities of the grammar. So that was such an interesting moment for me.
That was my conversation with Callie Linz, who lives in Nelson, BC. You've been listening to the 2024 Rendezvous de la Francophonie podcast, hosted and produced by Catherine Fisher. The podcast celebrates March, the month of the Francophonie, and it was made possible by the Dialogue Foundation, which has a mission to engage in a sustainable dialogue within the Francophonie and with all of Canada's diversity. This year's Rendezvous de la Francophonie partners and funders include the Government of Canada, the Linguistic Portal of Canada, the National Film Board, Air Canada, La Fédération de la Jeunesse Canadienne Française, NAF Canada, and many other groups, including the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
Welcome to the Franco Podcast.
Welcome to the 2024 Rendezvous de la Francophonie podcast. I interviewed 8 bilingual or multilingual people for this year's podcast, including Victoria King. Victoria is a manager at a charitable foundation in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and previously worked in the community radio sector. Here's our conversation. I'm wondering, what's the value of speaking more than one language for you?
For me, it's kind of a benefit that I think I have when it comes to looking for jobs and opportunities is a big one for me. The value, I also have found that in my life, I've done a bit of traveling, and it is definitely really exciting and beneficial when I go somewhere new and I can connect with people in another language and in their language, because French is not my first language. So yeah, it does open doors, which is cliche, but it really does. And I also just think the value or the benefit is it, I remember learning French and it challenged my brain to think in a new way. And it still does. Like I, you know, when I hear it on the radio or if I'm watching a movie or something, I kind of have to focus a little more. And I think it's good for my brain. It makes it work a little bit harder.
How about, does it kind of open up new avenues in terms of books and music and movies you mentioned?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think actually books is a good one. So my husband is the assistant manager at McNally Robinson Booksellers, which is an independent bookstore in Winnipeg. And he took French in school and learned French. And in his adult life, he's read books in French. And there's sort of a, depending on the book and the author, there's a really unique difference culturally and, you know, in the tone and everything, reading something in a new language. And I do think that it makes a huge difference to read something in its original language as opposed to a translation. There's nothing wrong with a translation, but I do think that there are, I think that there's probably nuances that are difficult to capture or challenging to capture when you apply translation to something. So that makes it pretty unique.
When did you start to learn French and how did that learning progress for you?
I started to learn French in school, in grade school. I was in English. All my courses were in English all through elementary school. And then when I was in junior high, I went to a junior high that offered late immersion. So it meant that you could start taking, you know, all your courses in French starting in grade 7. My husband, by contrast, he started learning French in, I think, kindergarten or grade 1, and he did all of his school in French. So I went to a school that offered late immersion, and then I actually did extra late immersion. So I was always in English until about the end of grade 8, and then I switched to French immersion in grade 9, and I did French immersion in grades 9 through, I think, 11 and 12. I had always enjoyed French. I'd always done pretty well with it. And then it just kind of happened that all of my friends in junior high were in French. And I really liked, there was a different mood in the classes. And I was really challenged by it at sort of a nice level where I felt like it was difficult. I was learning new things, but it wasn't so hard that it was totally out of my grasp. I remember it being really difficult, but I do remember that it was actually much better to have no other option. Like the fact that you could only speak French and like the teachers would not, you know, give in to you and speak English made it the learning a lot more efficient and it made me try a lot harder. And I had really great teachers. Like I went to it's a public school. It was Monroe Junior High in Winnipeg. And at a certain point, I don't know when it happened, but it just got easier and easier. And there will always be things that I still am challenged by and with French. But yeah, over time, it just got easier. And, you know, neither of my parents speak any French. And they didn't put me in French immersion because my mom had always said, well, we thought, if you brought home homework, we wouldn't be able to help you. We wouldn't know the language. So we couldn't, that's why we didn't put you in French. Yeah. And then in first year university, I ended up doing a study abroad course and I went to the south of France. And that was great. Like I went with a few Canadians and Americans. And it was interesting to see pretty much all the Americans learned like elementary, like basic French and sort of for myself and a lot of the other Canadians be able to move through the country and the classes a lot easier, mostly get it. It's been a long time since I've used my French daily, but it still comes back, which sometimes I'm surprised by. I listen to something. I'm like, oh yeah, no, I definitely still know what they're saying. And again, I still think the best way to learn it is to to be forced to use it, you know, to have no other choice, that that's the only language you're allowed to speak. You just learn fast, which is pretty amazing, actually, how we can adapt.
Do you find anything difficult about being bilingual?
I do find it, I didn't appreciate it when I was learning the language, and I still find it really challenging now, is just remembering that the like structure and patterns of the phrasing and the grammar is not just easy translate into English. It's not just knowing the words and replacing them. It's the actual like structure of the verbs and the pronouns and everything go in a different order. I find that very challenging. Yeah. And maybe just keeping it up is challenging. You know, I'm shy now about speaking in French. Even though I think if I sat at a table and people were speaking, I'd get it, or I could read the newspaper and I'd be fine. I'm very reluctant to say anything in French because I haven't kept it up.
When you're fluent in English already and you can talk about sophisticated things, I'm even at my beginner level of French. It's just really hard to, you know, to be at a lower level.
Yeah.
Is there another language that you'd love to learn?
I think that learning German would be, I'd love to learn German. My mother's side of the family is German, and my grandparents spoke German to each other. And her family immigrated to Canada in the early 1920s. And I think that my grandma used to teach me a bit of German when I was young. And so I don't remember much at all, but it's such a unique and like somewhat strange language to me. I don't hear it spoken often, and I don't hear it popularly, you know, on the radio or the television, but just it would make me think of my grandparents. So learning German would be pretty interesting.
This podcast series is going to be aired on campus community and Indigenous radio stations across the country to celebrate the Rendezvous de la Francophonie. You want to tell me a little bit about your long history with community radio?
So I first got involved with community radio in 2010, September of 2010, as a student at the University of Winnipeg. And then it really just kind of snowballed from there. I started doing a show at CKUW over time. After a period of time, I also became staff at the station. I was the volunteer coordinator for 3.5 years. And then I was the full-time program director for 2 years. I also served on the board of the NCRA, and I've done a lot of different kinds of radio. I had a music show for 9 years, almost 9 years. I hosted on a morning show. I produced a radio documentary at one point. So it's been just a constant in my life, and I think it helped me build more of my identity in my adult life, and it connected me to people and communities in this city in Winnipeg that mean a lot to me now. And yeah, introduced me to local music, which was a you know, ongoing interest of mine, just to see what music is coming out and what people are making. And it's been, you know, there's been stops and starts to it too, where I've taken a break or I've stepped away for a while, but I think it's nice. I feel like with campus radio, you know, that's a normal thing. It takes a lot of energy to make radio and a lot of thoughtfulness and attention. So I like the idea that maybe I can come back to it at different points in my life and try new things and also step away when I have other things in my life, you know? And I do think that that makes it a nice environment for everyone, you know, that you have different people coming in as leaders or as, you know, thought makers or whatever, and this ongoing cycle of people coming through. Can I ask you what inspired you to, so it's recently that you've been learning French, right?
Yes.
Okay. What inspired that?
Well, honestly, actually, I'd always thought I wasn't very good at French because maybe I didn't give it enough attention when I was in school, or you know, I don't know. I for some reason my mind was elsewhere. And then when I was actually hired as a contractor to start this blogging contract with the Dialogue Foundation as an Anglophone, I thought, you know, this would be an amazing time to start learning French. So I mm-hmm. just started with Duolingo because coincidentally I was having a coffee with a friend who said, "Oh, I'm learning Spanish on Duolingo," and I said, "What's Duolingo?" And you know, mm-hmm. I got the crazy on that. And I just started doing daily lessons, and I'm continuing to do daily lessons. And, you know, I've gotten past the elementary school stage, and I might be in the, well, I don't know, maybe I'm grade 6 now or something. So it's yeah. taken a while, but I have to admit the subject matter's not that interesting when you're reading at that level, but I've actually started kind of in the last year, I've started writing emails in French and reading emails in French with a dictionary, which is a little more interesting. I actually get kind of a rush when I successfully write an email without too many mistakes.
My husband, once in a while, when we're out or something, we'll play a game of trying to remember what certain things are in French. Or be like, what's the French word for nose or elbow or pinky, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's always really good at it. And I struggle, but his French is beautiful. When he speaks it, it's really nice. But
does he have a family roots in French?
No, no, it was just, well, his mom was a teacher.
Ah.
His mom was an educator. So I think that they really saw the value. And his dad, I mean, I don't know that this really matters, but like his dad is Portuguese, first generation Canadian. So I do think that even though his dad doesn't speak Portuguese, I think that he at least had some concept of being bilingual.
Yeah.
And actually, oh, this is an important to the interview right now, but I went on a tour at the University of Winnipeg the other day. And we were touring the psychology department, and one of the researchers is doing research into like the brain and bilingualism and how the brain lights up with different, like acquiring different languages, or like how our brain relies on one language to learn another. And she was saying, I didn't know this, but it makes a lot of sense. She said it's actually less common in the world to be monolingual, that more of the world mm-hmm. speaks more than one language than just one.
That was my conversation with Victoria King, who lives in Winnipeg, Manitoba. This year's Rendezvous de la Francophonie partners and funders include the Government of Canada, the Linguistic Portal of Canada, the National Film Board, Air Canada, La Fédération de la Jeunesse Canadienne Française, NAF Canada, and many other groups, including the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
You're listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.
Good night, good night, good night. To everybody out there, the radio land. This is The Sound of Soul with your host, Butcher T, filling in for the man, Ricky D. Playing the platters that matters, like Ricky D would say. And also, you can check me out every Friday right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Butcher T's Noontime Cuts, every Friday from noon to 2. Playing a wide variety of music. But right here on The Sound of Soul, a little bit of mediocre R&B, then we get into the Quiet Storm. Sometimes we just play strictly Quiet Storm right through from 12 to 1. Yeah. Alright, like I would say on my program, this is your musical medication to get you through the week, get you through the moments. So if you're with that favorite one, that special one, hold he or she tight. Just enjoy the vibes. So, you got your musical seatbelt on? That's good. All right, I'm doing it remotely right here in Kingston, Jamaica, uptown style. Yeah, where the weather is nice and hot, I say no more. So wherever you are in the universe, just enjoy your moment. All right, here we go.
Listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.
Good night, good night, good night. To everybody out there, the radio land. This is the Sound of Soul with your host, Butcher T. Filling in for the man, Ricky D. Playing the platters that matters, like Ricky D would say. And also, you can check me out every Friday right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Butcher T's Noontime Cuts every Friday from noon to 2. Playing a wide variety of music. But right here on the Sound of Soul, a little bit of mediocre R&B. Then we get into the Quiet Storm. Sometimes we just play strictly Quiet Storm right through from 12 to 1. Yeah. All right. Like I would say on my program, this is your musical medication. Get you through the week. Get you through the moments.